John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning, everybody. Here from the VMAC. Practice begins at 11:15, and they go till 1 o'clock. We're here till 12. Lots of things going on in the National Football League, and again, more injuries happening, not to this team, but to other teams. We'll get you up to date on that. We'll get you up to date on baseball. Let's get you up to date with the five biggest stories of the day. The top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
And the 1-0 pitch on the way to Robbie. Swing and a drive into left center field. Depth to the warning track to the wall. Goodbye, baseball! Robbie Cano with a three-run home run into the Mariners' bullpen. Holy smokes, and the Mariners take the lead. 7-4 over the Astros here in the bottom of the eighth inning. And everybody on their feet. Robbie Cano, his defining hit. With his return in game number six, Robbie with high fives back to the dugout, a hip bump from Nelson Cruz, and the Mariners lead it 7-4. Goodbye baseball, home run number five for Robbie Cano this year, and it is a beauty.
And we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Well, Robinson Cano comes through in the eighth inning with a three-run homer, and that gave the Mariners a 7-4 victory over the Houston Astros, and a key victory because now it gets them a little bit closer to the Astros. It's so weird to say the Astros and the A's because, you know, it's the Astros looking like they should have a 100-win team, and they're not playing good right now. You know, they're starting to get a little bit healthier, and the Mariners have now beaten them five consecutive games. That's amazing. It was a good combination of Adam Warren, Alex Colomé, and Edwin Diaz getting the final three innings, not giving anything up and protecting the game and giving Colomé the chance to get the victory. Diaz now has 48 saves, tying a club record. That's pretty impressive. And again, you know, he came off the blown save, but hey, that was probably overdue anyways from the, over the weekend. But nevertheless, Diaz continues to have an MVP type of season, a Cy Young type of season. I think the return of Ben Gamel definitely helped. Gamel went 2-for-4 in his return. Also, with Gene Segura off the paternity leave, his presence there. I think you can probably say with Gamel in the lineup, with Cano in the lineup, Haniger, of course, playing a little bit of center field, this was probably the best hitting lineup this team's been able to put out there since Robinson Cano has come back. And you notice, since Cano's come back, you know, they've struggled to score runs. I mean, they scored 2-2-5-1-1, and now they had a 7-run game last night, so maybe the hitting can return, and it comes at the most important time. Thought it was funny and good to see you know, Scott Servais going out and try to protect his players, because D. Gordon was unhappy with the strike call and began arguing with the umpire. Servais rushed out, got between the two, and then, of course, got D. out of the way and argued to a point where he gets ejected, Scott Servais, but D. gets to stay in the game. So, big victory for the Mariners. Series continues tonight. It's going to be Brad Peacock for the Astros, Mike Leake for the Mariners. And, of course, important if they can try to get the win and get the series victory over the Astros. That's going to be huge. And so, at the moment, team is 18 games over 500. And, you know, finally, could they start to hit? Maybe that's the case. That's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
First of all, we both love John Ryan. And this is all about competition. And there's been guys that have drafted. And, I mean, I was with a team that drafted a punter in the third round that completely failed, you know. I was with a team that drafted a kicker and was beat out by a rookie free agent. So it's all about competition.
Decisions, and of course, a decision on the special teams made yesterday. It's all come around. John Ryan was released, and that means that Michael Dixon, who's just been incredible, gets the job as the punter. And then Jason Myers being released, that means Sebastian Janikowski getting the job as the place kicker. So those things have now been resolved as they go into the third preseason game. They were able to go back and get a couple guys that they had back here and re-sign them. So the roster's at 90. John Ryan, I thought everything kind of worked out classy, because what you wondered about when they drafted Dixon, would it have been nice to let Ryan go at that time? And didn't seem to be any complaints coming from John Ryan. But then all of a sudden, an injury in Buffalo, Corey Carter, a second-year punter, he blows out his ACL. I'm sure what happened, John Ryan calls over to Stephen Hauschka, the Buffalo Bills kicker, and says, hey, would they want me? And he said, I think they could use you. You know, Colin Smith's the current punter. He's not great, and obviously he's not great. So it's an open competition. Ryan, of course, then asked for his release. The team gave him his release, and now he's on the way to Buffalo and will sign a contract today. So that competition now will go and see who gets that. But nevertheless, the jobs have been resolved right now, as it is going to be Michael Dixon, who's averaging now 51 yards plus per punt and has been incredible. He's going to be the punter. Colton Smith, of course, is the Buffalo Bills kicker that is now going to be challenged by Ryan. And Seabass gets the job over Jason Myers. We'll keep you up to date. Practice time begins at 11:15, and they go till 1. Of course, remember, camp is closed. There's no fans here. There's just reporters and that. They're all watching. We'll keep you up to date on what's going on with the Seahawks, who's practicing, who's not practicing here in the BMAC.
Number 3.
AP preseason football poll came out yesterday, and UW debuts at number 6, Huskies' highest ranking since
1997.
How that year? Is that a good year?
Beat Nick Saban to end that year.
To end it.
But that was in the Aloha Bowl when Nick was at Michigan State.
Not really what that was supposed
really
to go.
Alabama.
Unfortunately, that year was not great, but this year has great promise.
And so the Huskies get the AP poll vote number 6, pretty much in line with most of the other voting. You know, I know you've got Phil Steele. I think he had him at number 4, and Auburn now number 9. That September 1st game in Atlanta is going to be huge. That's going to be on ABC. But as noted, the Huskies getting their highest ranking since Brock Huert was not just doing the show. He was actually the show at the University of Washington in 1997 as the quarterback. So good. I think you can see that the team is loaded with good players. I think that some of the critiques, of course, maybe at defensive end pass rush and maybe a wide receiver, maybe it's a little bit better than people think, but they get the good ranking by AP, number 6, and big game coming up as it gets closer to the start of the season when they go against Auburn.
Number 4.
Most controversial thing in the NFL this preseason, yeah. The new rule about leading with your helmet. NFL is going to distribute a video to all the teams, the officials, and let everyone know the right way, the wrong way. Now, Richard Sherman has already seen enough. Mm-hmm. He went to Twitter. He thinks this rule's garbage. He calls for it to be abolished right away.
Yeah.
What's your view on it? Because, I mean, don't we all know, having been around the game, what looks correct and what doesn't look correct?
Yeah, look, I think somebody said today that common sense needs to rule here. I believe it was Jerry Jones who said that, and it does. Look, spearing with the top of the helmet, we all know that that's illegal and unsafe, both for the tackler and the guy who's getting tackled. Other than that, look, it's very subjective as far as helmet-to-helmet contact that doesn't involve the top of the head, because it's just, look, many people have said it. I've been saying this for months now. The shoulders and the head are connected together. You hit with your shoulder pads, your head's going to come with it. It's going to happen. Exactly.
And that's, of course, Lewis Riddick with Kenny Mayne talking about the helmet rule, which is a big controversy right now in the National Football League. Mike Zimmer even came out and said in a strong comment, it's going to cost some people some jobs. Playoffs, jobs, and the whole bit is he's guessing on. And I think everybody's guessing right now. I know Chris Mortensen reported for ESPN that the league is now entrenched in trying to make this work, and they're on a 3-year process of trying to at least get this thing going. They're not going to back down, even though I think they were rushed to try to put this in the way that they did, didn't think through a lot of things. And so now the latest is that they're going to assemble some more video tutorials to try to go ahead, distribute them to game officials, coaches, and players. Think about that for a second. If you have to distribute new game film and tape to the game officials to get them on the same page as learning it, how bad is it going to be trying to carry down to the coaches and the players? And Lewis Riddick said it right. If you're coming in with lowering your shoulders, your head's going to be attached to those shoulders, and it could make that hit that could get a penalty. I've seen it happen too many times. There have been 51 helmet hits so far for penalties in just 33 games. Way too much, but hey, right now everybody's going to kind of live with it because there's no other choice.
Number 5.
I'm not sure. I can't answer that question. When you look at some of the injuries that he's had over his career, and I get it, we oftentimes describe him as an alien. You know, he bounces back from injuries so fast, and he knows how to recover. But at this age, can he be a full-time running back? I would assume no. I think the best thing would be for them to really have a three-headed monster and really rotate these guys and keep these guys as fresh as possible.
And, of course, that's the news with the Washington Redskins down three injured running backs, signing Adrian Peterson. Peterson really didn't have a lot of gas in the tank at the end of last year and averaged for the season 3.4 yards a carry, and that is not too good. But, of course, he signed a minimum salary contract. I don't know if there's any guarantees in it, whatever. He's just kind of holding the place right now to see if he can get back in the league, and I would imagine he's probably going to get cut unless he shows something. The Redskins, with the loss of Darius Geis for the season, you know, need a back to upgrade. I don't know if Peterson's going to be that back, but at least he gets a job. The Buffalo Bills announcing that they're going to give Josh Allen the start in preseason game number 3, particularly with the injury to A.J. McCarron, which turns out not to be a fractured shoulder, but it's a shoulder injury that's going to take him into the season as a guy that's going to not be able to play. So it's a decision between Nathan Peterson and Josh Allen. Allen gets the start going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. ESPN has hired Victor Cruz, who officially announced his retirement from the National Football League. He had been a real good receiver, but now it's time to move on, and so he's going to ESPN. In other news, some bad injuries. Donovan Smith, the left tackle of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, suffered a knee injury. They think this could be a serious one, so that really hurts their line. An already injured Carolina Panthers line had Matt Khalil have some surgery, just a minor surgery, arthroscopic on his knee, so that, of course, is going to put him down for a little bit of time. As we mentioned, John Ryan signs with the Buffalo Bills, and then the strange Richie Incognito story. His father passed away this weekend, and I guess he was over in the over at the funeral place, and I guess he just kind of lost it. He had threats and everything else, so he's still in custody right now in the Phoenix area. Richie Incognito right now not in a good state of mind. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we go under further review, and because we have so much football stuff, we got to talk some baseball. So we'll get into the return of Robinson Cano and what he's doing, and we'll also have Ed Dixon joining us at 10:45. We'll also get a chance to get you up to date with what's going on with some of the other guests that we have coming up. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And what we do with this is, of course, go over and review some of the activities of the most recent days, of the most recent vintages, all those different things. And, of course, Mariners get the win last night over Houston, 7-4. And I know I've been saying this since the 80-game suspension starts, that Robinson Cano is really worth about 0.5 or 0.6 runs per game. And because, again, they were scoring 4.6 runs when he was on the roster. And then, of course, they went down to about 4 when he was off the roster for 80 games. And of course, you look at his return early last week. I mean, it didn't seem to click. Now, he was hitting well. He was doing some good things. I mean, kind of getting that great swing of his going and getting one or two hits a night. Wasn't driving in many runs, but of course, there wasn't many guys to drive in runs because they weren't necessarily on base in most of the games. But last night, I think, was the culmination of what you can see from Cano. A big 3-run homer in the 8th that got the 7-4 victory, and now I think things start to click. And I know that you look at the lineup with Ben Gamel returning, Gene Segura back from the paternity time that he was taking off with his wife, and then you come back and see Robinson Cano. Maybe the runs can start coming again. This was a good start against a good Astros team and a good victory. And I know Brock and Saul talked about it this morning, and I think the big thing that Mike liked was the attitude and the professionalism that Robinson Cano has shown since the suspension.
What's really impressed me about Cano is my fear was that he would come back and press. He would be swinging for the fences, and what you would see when Robbie starts swinging too hard, you know what we get? We get little rollover ground balls to first and second base, where he tops it, and he's trying to pull it to right field, and he just ends up hitting little soft ground balls and choppers to first and second base. He's done the opposite. It is as if he has come back with the express goal of going to left field as often as possible. And how many of his hits have just been waiting on it and little flick of the wrists, knocking the ball, little singles for the most part, over the shortstop's head and into left center field. And then you saw him pull the double last night and then go back to left field down the line for the second double.
Yep.
And so when he finally does hit the home run, A, it's in his natural swing. And B, he's got enough power to put it out to left center field at Safeco Field at night in late August. That is a no joke.
Through the smoke, Salk.
That is a
no joke. Through the smoke that's canceling soccer practices all over the state.
Don't get me started on canceling the practices all across the state. Yes. So Robbie's a hero, as he absolutely deserves to be. And credit to him. I think he's done an amazing job.
And he has done an amazing job, and I think that you can see that he was reflecting on it all the way through the 80 games. The way that he came back and he assembled some of the writers one day in July just to kind of clear the air and talk about the suspension. Didn't admit anything, but also was professional about it. Then he was very good about the concept that, hey, your second base days right now probably aren't going to happen unless there's an injury. You may have to play first. You may have to be a DH. You may have to be a third baseman. He was willing to do all that. And but the big thing is, and of course he was even willing to be number two in the order as opposed to number three while they try to reconstruct everything. But now I think maybe this is the time that he can really show. Unfortunately, he's not going to be in the playoffs, but maybe his return is a thing that can kick everything over the top and get this team into the playoffs. And that's one of the keys, because it looked pretty grim before the Houston series down in Houston that, this was really slipping away. Then they come back and they struggle against the A's, and you say, uh-oh, this is slipping away. But now, now five victories over the Houston Astros. I mean, think about that. The Astros, even when they were kind of mediocre, getting all those young, good players there, were beating the Mariners pretty consistently. Now for the Mariners to come back and take advantage of Houston, that's good. Now, can they do it the next two nights? We'll have to see about that. But Robinson plays a big role in that. Another guy that plays a big role and has so much on his shoulders is Felix Hernandez. Kind of a mixed review, him giving up four runs last night, but he did go six innings, and he at least gave this team the opportunity to try to win the game and wait for Robinson Cano. And so I know that's one of the things you kind of reflect on. Felix was going to be down and out as a starter. He was supposed to be in the bullpen. Then James Paxton gets the injury with the forearm, and so here's Felix going out there pitching 5 2/3 and doing pretty well. Respectable game against the Astros last night, but let's hear Brock and Salk debate it.
Walk away to another win. And so you got to start trying to find ways to keep chipping away at Houston. You're 3.5 back of both of those teams right now, and you just keep battling and doing what they did last night. The other side of it, of course, is Felix. I don't want to be biased. I mean, maybe my bias says that I didn't think Felix looked that good. He gives up the home run in the first, settles down so he doesn't get murdered and completely takes the, leaves the game out of his control. But he gives up three more runs and kind of lost it again in what was it, the third inning. And I don't know. I mean, he managed to make it through six and gave up four runs. So I guess that's a huge, huge thing for a bullpen that it was hurting after the Roenis Elias start. But was he good? Like, how do you take it? Scott Servais asked after the game, because they had a real animated conversation, said he liked the mechanics and the discussion they had in the dugout after Felix came out.
For me, it was a marked difference the last three innings. And, the conversation was back and forth about, do you know what you did? Did you feel it? The player's got to have a feeling for what it was. And, he had a pretty good idea what was the difference. He just said, I was able to locate my fastball. For me, the finish on his pitches, the extension down the mound, controlling his body over the rubber longer and getting the arm out front, it was a noticeable difference, which was great. He was able to locate the fastball. It wasn't like his off-speed pitch was dazzling anybody tonight, the curve or the changeup, but location of the fastball, and we saw it consistently, in the low 90s tonight.
And that's the key, because I don't know. I think that if there's a way to kind of get consistency out of Felix, get six innings, because I think now emerging is the number seventh inning guy, which we're going to ask Shannon Dreher about him, Adam Warren. Adam Warren came in, did well in the seventh, got him to Colome in the eighth, and Diaz in the ninth inning. And if you can get that seventh, you shorten the game. So if you can get those four runs, then you have a great chance of winning. And so last night they got the four runs. Felix gave up four, but I think it was a good effort by Felix. Maybe not great, but again, I don't know. Maybe the great days are gone. They may not be back. But if he can just get some consistency and be available, and of course this was more valuable for him to go out there and get this spot start filling in for Paxton, and we'll see how soon Paxton gets back. We'll ask Shannon Dreher about that. But overall, I think that was an encouraging sign for Felix, an encouraging sign for the team. So the series continues tonight. 7:10 will be the game time, 6 o'clock on the pregame. So Mariners against the Houston Astros. We'll talk to Shannon Dreher next to get wrapped up on a very important victory for the Mariners. And you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Shannon Dreher. It's the John Clayton Show. 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreyer. And so, Shannon, big victory last night. And I guess finally the whole impact of having Robinson Cano come back really came out in the eighth inning. 4-4 tie, three-run homer, the funk dance and everything else. I guess the funk hit, whatever you want to call it. It was a big performance for Robinson Cano, who means so much to this offense.
Means so much to this offense and apparently to the fans, too. It was really incredible to hear the reception he got as he was coming back to the dugout, not just from his teammates, but the fans at Safeco Field. There were almost 27,000 there, and they wanted a curtain call. And things got moving pretty quickly afterwards, so he didn't come out. But it was neat to see. And we talked a little bit about the progression that I thought that we would see with Robinson Cano, and that's exactly what we saw, what we see from him at the beginning of the season, what we see from him in spring training. It's going to move quicker now because he kept that bat active once he was healthy and once he had that hand healed. But to come into the game, have six hits, all of them singles, and then all of a sudden you see the doubles using all sides of the field, and then boom. That was a tough pitch to put where he did, and he's the kind of hitter that can do that, and you hope we see that for the next month.
Well, now, describe his swing, because it's so sweet, but I think you've watched it for so many years. He usually starts out a little slow in March and all that, or in April, and then you know it kind of gradually builds up like you just talked about for the last week. Talk about the evolution of his swing.
Well, you look at what he does, and I mean, his swing is his swing. He has had it for a long time. He's not a guy that you hear, Kyle Seager, you'll hear about a bunch of different adjustments and tinkering. Mike Zunino, you'll see complete swing overhauls. He's not a guy that does that. You don't even hear about adjustments very often, but he's, they're always making small adjustments. But for him, I think it's the total process of seeing the ball, being able to use the entire field, and as he gets into it, the legs more into it, and all of a sudden the swing is where he wants it to be. That's when you see the baseballs really start flying. And he is kind of that classic hitter, and a little bit like Edgar Martinez, a little bit what Nelson Cruz has been trying to do, but he's one of those guys that is not going to ever go up there trying to hit a home run. Home run is going to come from the mechanics and him being in the right place, and that's what he trusts, and that's what he relies on. So, the first thing that he does when he gets into spring training and they get into games is just make sure that he can put the ball where he wants to, that he can go up the middle. He focuses on the up the middle quite a bit. That starts feeling good. All of a sudden, okay, well, let's start going the other way a little bit. And then you start seeing the extra base hits start to come up, and then you start to see the power come through. But he's very methodical in how he goes about getting it to where it needs to be. And again, this wasn't like it was in spring training where you've been off an entire winter. He had a month under his belt, month and a half under his belt, had to shut it down because of the hand injury. And then he made a very interesting choice, and the Mariners let him do it, and it appears it probably was a good way to go. He didn't take all the rehab starts that he could. He didn't spend all of the time that he could with the team or at the facility up until that 2 weeks where he's allowed to start playing ball. He wanted to go back to the Dominican Republic, work out at his father's facility, which is what he would do to get ready for a season. And then he knows enough guys over there that he basically was able to call on pitchers that could throw 91, 92, 93 in some instances. And what he wanted to do is, rather than get into those rehab games in the minor leagues, is he wanted to say, okay, I need you to put this many pitches right here. I need you to put this many pitches right here. And just really go to work on what he wanted to work on against true, almost MLB caliber. Some of the pitches would come in that way, not all of them, but, they were Dominican former professional players. Some were former, I think there was a former big leaguer that may have been throwing to him as well, but did it in a very different way, and perhaps that is something that has helped him get back quickly. Because, again, sometimes, these guys can be a slow starter. Sometimes it can take a month to get to what we saw last night, but the work that he put in away from the club, it's too soon to call. It was one really great game, but I think there's a good chance we'll be saying that that was a good plan of attack for him.
It could be stated that with Cano now starting to get stronger and back into the normal Cano rhythm, the re-addition of Ben Gamel, and then, of course, the return of Gene Segura, that the lineup that was out there last night against particularly right-handed pitchers may have been one of the best they have this season for hitting. Could that be correct?
I think it could. And what so impressed me with what we saw last night was the at-bats. We saw good at-bats pretty much top to bottom. The insider that I'm running on the half hour on the hours right now is talking about the number of pitches that they saw. Mitch Haniger saw 24 pitches in that game last night, followed by Robinson Cano, who saw 25. So the top of that order, right from the get-go, is just really wearing down the pitcher. Gene Segura is a little bit less. Nelson Cruz, it comes up. And then they made an interesting move with the lineup, and they put Denard Span ahead of Kyle Seager. And Denard Span puts up some of the best at-bats that you see on this team. It was his six-pitch walk that he took in the fifth inning that got Gerrit Cole from 90 pitches to 97 pitches, or 96 pitches. And of course, he was out of the game one batter later. And when this team is going good, that's what you can see from them. We've seen it earlier in the season where they have the ability to kind of grind out the at-bats, get that starter out of there, get into the bullpen and go. And, you know, Gerrit Cole is one of the top pitchers in the American League. He's got, coming into the game, batters are hitting 188 off of him. He's faced the Mariners four times this year. Only once has the Astros come away with a win in that game. So I think you look at what they did, a blueprint in the at-bats, order, it's not quite as important. You can flip a guy here or there, but what they did last night certainly worked. You have D. Gordon at the bottom that can get the speed thing going when you flip the lineup over, and you just really, I think we're just stacking up some not just good bats and good hitters, but hitters that were have the ability to put up that good at bat at the top and through the middle of the order.
No doubt. And, of course, that was a huge one last night. And, of course, Felix Hernandez may not have been a great start, but it was a needed start because he was able to get to six innings, gave up four runs, but it was 4-4. I mean, how do you evaluate his performance?
I think it was a step forward. And I think we saw an adjustment that he made in the game. When he came out, he gives up the one run in the first inning. You're like, okay, it's one run. But you look at the stuff, and he was not hitting his spots. And so you initially had that feeling he might not be long for this game. He's getting outs, but they're going to start hitting mistakes, and there's going to be a problem. Had the inning where he gave up the three runs, but then he comes back, and we saw more of what we saw in Oakland. We saw the ability to really kind of hit the bottom of the zone with a sinker, not making as many mistakes with it. We saw a very good curveball from him. And all of a sudden, rather than seeing the 89-90 with the fastball, we saw a lot more 90-91, 92s as well from him. And that could be a huge difference maker for him. And when he came out of the game in the sixth inning, it was great to see that he didn't roll over. Not that he's one to do that often, but as beat up as he is through the season that he's had, and I'm not talking physically, I'm talking mentally, it might have been easy to do that when he had given up four runs, but he pitched his best baseball the next three innings, got through the six innings, was dominant in two of those innings. And to see Scott Service come over and talk to him after that ball game on the bench, in the dugout, and to see Felix, it being more of a conversation, more of a dialogue, what are you doing? Do you know what you were doing? Seeing the back and forth there, I think was a huge thing, because I think one of the things that has been Felix's biggest problem is he can't get out of his own way, and his insistence in how he wants to do things, keep things the same. Well, he's been making changes, and you know, some of them are cosmetic and silly, like he's insisting he's going to stay in the bullpen. He likes watching the games from the bullpen. I'm going to think it's a little more fun out there than being on the bench, and that's fine. But more significant changes in that when he did go to the bullpen, all of a sudden his routine changes. He's no longer on a starter routine where they have a day off and then they might play a long catch and they'll have a bullpen day. Relievers throw every day. So he has been out there playing long toss every day. He has been throwing flat ground sessions, hasn't gotten up on the mound in between. Might not be throwing as much each day he throws, but over the course of a start week, he is throwing more, and I think that might have benefited him. And he said after the game he is going to stay in that routine. So that kind of attacks the physical side of it a little bit. You've seen him acknowledge that he is making changes. That's the last question I asked him last night. Felix, I know it's hard for you to make changes. How proud are you that you did? And he acknowledged. He said, I have to. I'm getting older. And that's the first time we've heard that from him. So my fear coming out of Oakland was that he had that nice performance in relief. He was the hero coming in for James Paxton, that he would say, well, of course that happened. I'm Felix. It looks like he's looking into more of the whys, which, you know, I believe that he has got enough stuff to be an effective pitcher in the big leagues for a while longer. He's got to figure it out. He's got to get the mental side, the physical side. I think it's going to take a full off season of very different work. I think it's there, and I think we're starting to see that he's starting to see that, and I don't think he's ready for for it to end. Now, the ball's in his court. We'll see what he does, but I really think the pieces are there.
Now, have they found their new seventh-inning guy in Adam Warren, who came in and had one really solid inning? Because he's been pitching well. His earned run average is in the twos. Could he be the seventh-inning guy now?
He could be one of them, and you know, we saw that when he first came over from the Yankees, that's exactly how they were using him, and we're just going to throw you right into this role. And we saw a little lefty-righty with Zach Duke as well, but Warren had a little bit of a bumpy start his first two outings and has been solid since. So I think that that is one of those areas where I think that, you know, a couple more outings like that and they're going to be feeling better about the bullpen. We've seen Duke, he again has had some really rocky outings, but he's also had some clean innings as well. And that history, you hope that you see that. But from what we've seen from Warren the last couple of times out, I think that's another one that you can add and kind of put closer to the back of the bullpen and what they need to do right now.
Shannon, great stuff. Big game tonight. And Mike Leake, who's been very consistent out there on the mound. Of course, you're always consistently good. Shannon, thanks for joining us on the Venue King Hotline.
Thank you, John. You have a good day.
Okay, sounds good. You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up next, chance to visit with Ed Dixon and Alex Magoo, who's completing over 70% of his passes. Could he be the backup quarterback? We'll talk to them next when we go behind the lines. It's the John Clayton Show, 710. ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
As you know, in Dallas, and we go behind the lines, the Dallas Cowboys are maybe in need of a free safety, and they went for a Seahawk type of free safety who's not named Earl Thomas. And they're doing this because Xavier Woods may not be able to make the start of the season, their free safety, because of a hamstring injury. Jaron Johnson just signed a deal to go with them. No Earl Thomas. I don't know that's going to happen. We'll stay, keep you on top of that. But Jaron Johnson ends up going to the Dallas Cowboys. Well, tell you what, Michael Dixon is incredible. I mean, he has come in here and shown things that I don't think I've ever seen. And, of course, he's got a bag of tricks that he has being a former rugby player that can really go back and do this. So let's listen to what Michael Dixon is able to do and what he might do in the future.
Joining us right now is Michael Dixon. So, again, you do an amazing thing. You get a 58-yard punt to the 10-yard line to a point where all you can do is take the ball out of bounds. How do you place it like that?
Practice, just repetition. Just, I mean, that's what I'm aiming for, and throughout the week I'm always trying to give them as little room as possible to run it back in, so it just came off well.
How many different tools do you have like that that you can do?
I have a few different. I mean, I haven't really explored all the different options because coming from Aussie rules, you can obviously do so many different things with the ball, and I'm just working on a lot of the things that, you know, I want to try and bring into the punting world, but, you know, just stuck to the traditional tonight and the other week, so traditional stuff served me well as well.
So the first game against Indianapolis, you have 5-3 punts, 50-yard average, 47-3, which is pretty much your college average. It's like, those are pretty impressive numbers, and it looked like that was just, okay, just going to come in, do the normal stuff, and we'll save the other stuff for later.
Yeah, I mean, if the normal stuff, so, you know, works better, then we'll just do the normal stuff, but, yeah, that's exactly right. I just treated it like it was a college game and just went out there and played like it was college, and it felt the same out there, so it couldn't ask for anything more.
I'm intrigued by some of the tools. Like, the one thing I was able to watch you do, you stand on your left leg, you put the ball on your right foot, standing with the foot in the air, and then you kick it in the air and then kick it 50 yards. It's pretty remarkable.
Oh, yeah, my warm-up?
Yeah.
That's just part of my warm-up that gets my ball dropping everything in line. And yeah, on game day, I seem to hit him a little bit further because I got that little extra juice about me, so yeah, I was hitting them well today.
What other type of things do you do like that in warm-ups?
In warm-ups, nothing too different. I mean, at practice, I'm always working on trying to get it to curve from left to right, make it hard for the returner, and from right to left, and, you know, low hard ones or anything that's going to make the returner, you know, hopefully muff it.
Now, in the first game against Indianapolis, you know, two hit the ground because, again, I don't know, does it come down like a knuckleball or does it come down like a duck that's been shot that makes it hard for the guy to be able to catch it?
I think it comes down as a spiral, and it's always hard to judge. I've tried catching punts before, and if it comes down as a spiral, it's pretty deceiving in the air. It comes down a lot faster than what you think. So if it's a tight spiral, it'll come down pretty fast. Or if I don't hit it perfectly, it might come down a little curvy, a little wonky, and that's also hard to catch. So, yeah.
When did you, what age did you start perfecting these type of things?
Well, I only started punting in March of 2015. And really since I got to the Seahawks is when I started playing around with the different types of kicks. But, you know, in Aussie rules, you do them all the time. So just recently I've been trying to transfer them over into the punting NFL world.
Which Aussie kicker did you follow the most?
Oh, when I was young, I always knew about Sav Rocker. He was one that I always heard about. Darren Bennett, Ben Graham, and then Brad Wing recently, and Jordan Berry, and those are the guys that I was looking up to in recent years, and yeah, happy to be part of that group now.
Was Ben kind of the one that kind of broke everything and got more opportunities for everybody?
In Australia, yeah, but Sav Rocker, because he used to play for my favourite team, the Collingwood Magpies, so I was always watching him kick massive goals in Aussie rules, watching him hit spirals in that sport, and always had a fascination with it. So he was really the one that that interested me in everything.
Hey, Michael, congratulations.
Thank you, Brian.
That's Michael Dixon. Incredible story. I mean, boy, the bag of tricks that he's coming over from Australian rules football and what he's going to be able to do, kind of remarkable, and that's great to hear. Now, another guy that really did so a good job, and he explains a little bit about why there was some little bumps in the road in the first 2 weeks of training camp. Seventh-round choice Alex Magoo, who was exceptional in the game on Saturday night. Let's talk to him. Joining us right now is Alex Magoo. So how did this game feel to you today?
Good. It was, you know, a game that, you know, I came back from the first game. I learned some, you know, what I did, and, you know, I came back and, you know, I corrected some mistakes that I had, and, you know, I simplified my mind, and, you know, I went out there and played ball.
It's been kind of a little bit of a roller coaster. You started out at the OTAs and the mini camp were fantastic. Like, everything was like, wow, look at that. Tight throws, big running plays, Brett Favre type flip plays near the goal line and all that stuff. And then at the beginning of camp, it seemed like, you know, it was kind of a little bit of a learning curve catch up in that. It was kind of a little bit of some problems. But now, last two games, I mean, decent last week, really good tonight.
Yeah, like, you know, like you said, I was, you know, I think it's just, you know, just this next level. I just got to, you know, learn. And, you know, every day's a learning experience for me. And I just come in and work, you know, Russ House, and they help me out as much as they can. And I, you know, I just try to come in every day and learn. You know, that's the biggest thing. You can learn. You know, I got to try to learn as much as I can, as fast as I can, you know.
What's the biggest challenge as far as what you have to learn?
Yeah, I would just say the fine details, you know, every play. You know, it's not just knowing, you know, what the route is or how deep it is. It's what happens versus this coverage or this coverage or this. So, you know, that's what I think I'm thinking about. And, you know, I just kind of simplified my mind. That was the big thing coming from week one to week two. You know, so, you know, I just think that I did that today. And, I, you know, I made some plays, but, you know, my receivers made some plays too now. So,
yeah.
You know, my hat's off to them. My hat's off to my line for giving me protection. I don't think I even felt rushed, you know, the whole game. So, you know, great job to those guys. And, you know, I just was there to facilitate.
Let's kind of go through a couple things that I noticed of you, like particularly like in the OTAs. I mean, you have kind of a impromptu style when necessary, whether it's to, you know, roll out, make a pitch, do something like that, make a run.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something you've always had?
Yeah, you know, I just call it playing football. You know, I just think I play football. You know, Russ plays football. You know, sometimes Russ can do some crazy things, you know. And, you know, I just feel like I have that type of style. You know, so where if something breaks down, you know, I don't, oh no, let me just ditch this out of bounds. You know, I'm trying to make a play. I'm trying to do whatever I can to get a ball into a, you know, a guy's hand that can make a play. So, you know, I just call it playing football.
The other thing is I notice in certain type of throws, particularly like in the middle of the field, you really can throw into tight windows. What type of plays work like that for you?
Well, you know, I think that's a testament to, you know, the trust I have in receivers. You know, to go across the middle, make tight catches, you know, with guys bouncing off of them, and, you know, to not be afraid to take a hit over the middle. But, you know, I just think it's just the way I play. You know, I play all out. You know, I think, you know, if you hold back, you know, you're not trying hard. You know, so I'm just going to go out and give it my all. And if I think I have something, I'm gonna throw it. So, you know, if it's tight, it's tight. But I think I can make every throw. So, you know, that's why I'm not afraid to throw in a tight windows.
How, take us through the touchdown play, the fade pass, because that had to be really a good feeling for you. Probably your best moment in the pros.
Yeah, without a doubt. It was just a good play call. Very great, very good protection. You know, the line didn't feel anything. Malik had a really good release off the line, and he beat him to the corner, and I just threw it up knowing that he was going to get there. And, you know, it's in the books now.
And, of course, on the two-point play, it's like that was, that's a tight window.
final throw that you made.
Yeah, you know, Cyril had a great move off the line. He beat him good, so I just darted in there. You know, why loft it when he beat him so bad? So I just wanted to put it on quick, you know, to just get those 2 points.
So now you're back to just playing ball.
Yeah.
Just enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, just playing ball and playing football and keeping things simple.
Hey, Alex, thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
And again, kind of stressing the how quality this draft class is. There's no guarantee that Alex Magoo is going to make the team, but he certainly enhanced his chances. And you look at it, he's completing like about 75, 76% of his passes. That's not bad. So looks like he's gone through the little struggle, trying to probably take in too much during the first 2 weeks of camp. Now he's just playing ball. And, of course, we'll see how much he plays in the preseason game on Friday night against the Minnesota Vikings. You can check out the show, 710 Sports app, on your Acura dealers. And of course, coming up next, we're going to talk to Sean Salisbury, do some four downs. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.